there was a faith foundation to live it out, combined with, for us, real authentic community. So we had a great church community, small group, other couples, and so that was key. Mm-hmm. In the process, I believe couples have to be in community. I believe that's where our support and security and all kinds of stuff happened. And so for us, that was a reality. That's when our community rallied. We didn't hide. We reached out. We sought support. We found accountability. We walked the path people were telling us to walk and restored our marriage.
Welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast, where men rediscover courageous masculinity. Pull up a chair as we gain strength from the stories of God working in the lives of ordinary men today. These men have discovered that in a world of superficiality and isolation, we need authentic brotherhood to gain strength for the battles we face every day. Brought to you by the ministry of CLC, which challenges men to an uncommon pursuit of Christ, welcome to Empowered Manhood. Hey guys, welcome back. My name is Mike Hatch, and I am your host, and I will be joined shortly by my co-host, best-selling author Chris Bollinger. Hey, I have to apologize, guys. I know this episode dropped a day late. I am really sorry. Man, it has been busy with my new book that has just come out and trying to balance everything. So pray for me with regard to that. I will do better at making sure this first episode gets out on Wednesday. Again, typically we post the first episode on Wednesday and the second half of the interview on Friday. So I will still be posting the second half tomorrow. All right, guys. Hey, today we are speaking with Eric Wooten, who is a dynamic speaker, author, and relationship expert. He holds a master's of marriage and family counseling from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and is a licensed professional counselor. Eric is passionate about relationships and has been working with couples for more than a decade. He is the author of The Magnetic Marriage, 8 Characteristics of Irresistible Marriages, and is committed to creating resources that will help couples prepare and strengthen their marriages. Eric formerly served as the pastor of couples and counseling at One Community Church in Plano, Texas, before launching Altered Marriage. He and his wife, Jill, have been married for 25 years and have 3 daughters. Also, it was fun looking at their bios on the homepage of their ministry, Altered Marriage. It says that Jill is the co-founder and the brains behind Altered Marriage. So I love how she's getting credit here, which is great, as every good husband should do. But Jill is definitely a big factor in their Altered Marriage ministry as well. And in fact, they say on the homepage, putting up with Eric for 25 years provides the world with living proof that you can do anything. You too can do anything. I thought that was great. So Altered Marriage is an amazing ministry that Eric and his wife Jill founded. And I am really looking forward to you guys getting to hear what he has to say today. We hear his fence post story, and then he shares a little bit about the significance of, as a couple in your marriage, being connected into a larger community and how that impacts you as in your marriage and your relationship. I personally, as a pastor, have found so many couples will isolate away from community, and that's when you get into trouble. So Eric has some great things to share with us today. Just a quick reminder, hey, we are a listener-supported podcast, so any financial help is so appreciated. We're really grateful if you feel God calling you to come alongside of us financially here at CLC to help disciple men all over the world. That is our mission and our passion. And you can reach out to me for more information if you want to learn more at mhatch@clchq.org. You can go to our website at clchq.org and reach out that way to find out more. And we'd love to come alongside you, whatever your context is, business, nonprofit, church, ministry leader, and just help you think through and strategize a men's discipleship plan. Also, remember, my book, Manhood, Empowered by the Light of the Gospel, releases on April 4th. I'm so excited. I got the shipment of books recently, and that's been awesome. So I've gotten to give out some books and send some books to some folks. And so thank you to everybody who has already pre-ordered on Amazon. I really, really appreciate it. Appreciate all the support. If you'd like to hear the introduction and first chapter, I released that in last week's episode. Hopefully that will give you an idea about the purpose of the book and why I wrote it, and hopefully equip you to help share it with others, because obviously I really want men to live empowered by the light of the gospel and not keep cowering in the dark from fear and insecurity. I know what that feels like, and trust me, it's better on the other side. All right, guys, so we're going to jump in now to our interview with Eric Wooten. Hey, Eric Wooten, welcome to the Empowered Manhood Podcast.
Hey, good to be here.
Man, we are excited to have you and talk about your incredible ministry, Altered Marriage, which I'm kind of encouraged by this, Chris. I don't know if you feel this way, but you're the second or third person I think we've talked to who has like a marriage ministry like this.
Awesome.
Which is encouraging, yeah, to know that folks like you are out there who are ministering to couples. So praise God for that. So welcome to the show. We start out, of course, with your fence post story. And for those who are listening for the first time, as a reminder, or as a reminder for those who listen to us every week, you just think about a fence along a property. Each of those vertical posts represent a significant moment or person in your life that contributed to who you are today. And so, Eric, we'd love to hear your fence post story. And how has God brought you along, you know, throughout your life to bring you to this place where you are today? It'd be great for our listeners to learn more about you.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the foundation of faith for me was just family legacy. You know, my parents, both Christians, especially on my mom's side, her dad was a missionary. They're English. They were missionaries in Japan. And so that's who I was named after. So there's some, you know, name and faith legacy. But that's where it started. Grew up in a Christian home. Dad was Army for 26 years. And then I was a director of counseling at Focus on the Family for 15 years as well. So there's some faith heritage.
Yeah.
And, but I think honestly, just really didn't have a whole lot of difficulty, loss, you know, anything throughout childhood. I think faith was easy. I would say it that way. Faith was easy. Faith didn't cost me anything. And so it was, which I think is the case for, you know, here we are in the United States. I think that's the case for a lot of Christians in Western society. There's not a big cost. Yeah. You can be a Christian and nobody's attacking you. Nobody's hurting you. So yeah, I think was probably just kind of cruising along, got married and, you know, did the church thing. And then we are now 28 years into marriage, but just shy of 10 years into marriage, my wife had an affair. And honestly, I think that was the first time where I had a moment that was kind of like, this is, I guess it's time to live out my faith, right? This was probably the first moment in my life where I was faced with a situation where it kind of felt like, you know, nobody's going to say anything that makes you feel better. Nobody's got a quick solution answer for you. This is one of those moments where, you know, it's painful. There's betrayal. There's, you know, do you know how to walk out forgiveness, trust, reconciliation? Can you love like Christ? You know, all the stuff we've talked about, you know, at least in my life, I talked about for decades, right? Oh yeah, this is what faith is, was a chance to really live it out. So I think for me, that was really a moment to kind of a crossroads, definitely a fence post that says, I got to drive a stake in here and say, you know, this is what I'm about. And am I going to trust God? And am I going to forgive? And am I going to reconcile like I'd say Christians should, or, you know, am I going to operate out of the flesh? I think that was, definitely a moment.
Yeah.
Fence post there.
Real quick, that's significant to me because more often than not, when guys come on our show, they talk about their own affair. You're the first, I think, that we've talked to who your wife had the affair. It's tragic that it happened, but it's great to get this perspective. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that from you.
Yeah. So that was really, I think, one of the first moments where I would say I had to own my faith. I had to live it out. I had to walk it out, you know, where the rubber met the road as far as, are you going to do what you say you're about?
And that is, I think, huge because I've said this before. I think when our faith is lived out in relationship, That's where the rubber meets the road. Are we going to love like we believe God has called us to? Are we going to forgive? Are we going to have grace? Are we going to ask forgiveness when we mess up? I think that's what a lot of men miss out on when they're living in isolation and they're not in relationship, close relationship with others. It's easy to live your faith out when you're not around anybody. And obviously it's a whole nother level when you're married, but I'm grateful that you brought that perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, luckily, there was a faith foundation to live it out, combined with, for us, real authentic community. So we had a great church community, small group, other couples. And so that was key in the process. And you'll see as soon as we start talking about altered marriage and what I believe, but, community is key. I believe couples have to be in community. I believe that's where our support and security and all kinds of stuff happen. And so for us, that was a reality that's when our community rallied. We didn't hide. We reached out. We sought support. We found accountability. We walked the path people were telling us to walk and restored our marriage. And really, fast forward, not even a year and a half, and we were headed into ministry. And so I think that was also a catalyst for that. I think looking back, it's always easy to look back and see the steps, right? But in the midst of it, just wasn't excited about what I was doing work-wise, but really didn't know what I should be doing and probably was really just running from God anyway. So, whether I'm not going to say God allowed it for, to get a hold of me, or I certainly think he allowed it for some healing on my wife's side that she needed that wasn't aware of. And so that was a catalyst moment for even to go into ministry. And there was already a passion for marriage. Our first 10 years had not been wonderful, been ups and downs and struggles. And so it was already
affairs don't normally happen in a bubble, do they?
What's that?
Affairs don't normally happen in a bubble, do they? There's
No. But it really wasn't the affair specifically was really not tied to the state of our relationship. Our relationship was pretty good at that point. It was really tied to stuff in my wife's life she hadn't dealt with. But yeah, it was we had gone through infertility stuff and adopted three kids, and so there was just a lot of life difficulty in there. And so yeah, that was kind of the catalyst for ministry in general. Specifically marriage ministry, and that led us into ministry and me getting a master's degree in counseling, becoming a licensed counselor and working on staff at three different churches over 15 years before, in 2020 launching Altered Marriage, solely to focus on relationships. So that's kind of has been my faith journey. And we can run down any rabbit trail you want, but that's the 30,000 foot overview.
Eric, I've talked to a lot of men who've had marriage problems at about the same point, 7, 10, 13 years in. I mean, they talk about the 7-year itch, for decades. And it really is a legitimate thing. I think I've read that it's typically around 3 years and then around 7 to 10. And then even further on, couples often have issues. Maybe it's an affair. Maybe it's something else. And many of these couples are in churches. They're attending small groups, and the outcome is very, very different for them, right? I mean, the marriage ends up going downhill, maybe resulting in divorce. Can you walk us through? I don't want to dwell on it, but can you walk us through? Sure. I mean, you mentioned you had a supportive community and that you had a good outcome, but what are some of the key things that happened during that difficult period where you were able to come out on the other side and have a stronger marriage and to even go into ministry to help couples?
Yeah, the number one key was community. You've got to have that level of support and accountability. Just people to walk with you. I think a lot of, I work obviously with a lot of couples who are going through a similar situation. And oddly enough, the percentage of couples who go through infidelity and come out on the other side better is really high. Of those who have, I'm thinking, just trying to think off the top of my head from my experience, which of the couples I've worked with that just haven't made it. And this is not a statistically accurate, researched, number, but I would say only about 10% from my experience have not been able to reconcile. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it has not been because the betrayed person just couldn't get over it. It's usually because the betrayer just wasn't willing to do what they needed to do, or, you know, was checked out enough. They just weren't going to check back in, kind of thing. But yeah, I would say only about 10% of the couples that I've spent, and maybe that speaks to the community aspect, right? Probably the bigger right. percentage is those who don't have that. And so, yeah, I think it was number one, the biggest, maybe the only reason I would say would be community, because it is just a process and it takes time. And obviously there's some specific things that need to happen as far as, you know, logistically, right? Cutting off the affair, the rebuilding of trust, the, you know, evaluation, you know, finding meaning in what happened, addressing the relationship, moving forward, setting new boundaries. And, you know, there's some practical stuff, but I think the big foundation of the whole thing is community. Do you have people around you that can walk with you through it? And so I recommend that, you know, a large number of, I have a marriage membership, you know, membership community for couples to connect and get resources. And we do live Zoom calls and stuff. And a good number of the couples in there have been couples I've counseled through infidelity and said the same thing. You guys need community. We don't want to, you know, we're pretty private. We don't tell anybody. And, you know, after I push and push and push, you know, eventually I say, hey, just show up. You don't have to talk. Just show up and see the conversation. And as soon as they show up and see the conversations that are happening and see other people like them, they're like, oh, yeah, I showed up. I wasn't going to talk. And I ended up, you know, talking the whole time. And this is amazing. And thank you so much. So
is that a virtual community?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Did your wife get counseling? Eric, did you get counseling as a couple, or did you just rely on the community that you had?
Yeah, my wife did some individual counseling. Okay. But we as a couple and me personally relied more on community than, okay. And you know, I mean, I've got, my dad's a counselor, you know, so right. I had some people who, you know, either had expertise or experience having been through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so we actually didn't even do like couples counseling with a licensed professional counselor because we, you know, we had couples and individuals in our lives who had the ability to help us there. Right. If we didn't, absolutely, we would have gone that route.
Yeah. Yeah. You were very blessed to have.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's,
and
that's
your own family. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah. That's why I'm passionate about community. Cause, right. Cause the realization is that's what helped us make it. And too many people wait to go find community after it's happened. And
right.
You don't have that trust built up. So it's kind of like, yeah, that's not going to work. You need community now because we don't know what's going to happen.
Man, that's huge. That's so in alignment with what we talk about on this podcast, but also in CLC, the significance of community and what role that plays in every man's life. When my wife walked in on me, well, I was looking at porn and everything blew up. I was, you know, God pushed me into the light, if you will. One of the first things that happened was I was connected to a CLC group of guys where I got to experience that vulnerability and authenticity of those relationships. Huge, huge catalyst to my own recovery from pornography. But of course, I was living in isolation up to that point, which just,
yeah.
And I see that happen with couples. As a pastor, I've seen that. So many couples, it seems counterintuitive, but they will isolate themselves from community. Yeah. I'm sure you've seen that in your ministry.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you mentioned that you worked, what was your role at Focus on the Family?
No, my dad was the director of counseling there for 15 years. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. It was your dad that was, okay. All right. And that's where that counseling kind of thing was going on in your family you were familiar with and grew up.
Yeah. He was a licensed clinical social worker in the Army for 26 years. And then, he'd been at it a long time.
So at what point did you and your wife, and your wife's name is, what was your wife's
Jill.
Name? Jill. At what point did you and Jill decide, okay, we need to start a ministry around this? What was that?
Why yeah, was it was, moment? It was sometime in that year of healing.
Okay.
That just, it just made sense, I guess. So, you know, we were on this journey and it was already there a little bit, right? I mean, we had been involved in small groups and worked with couples and had couples over, and I could give you instance after instance, you know, looking back of, I remember the one time she had a friend whose husband was talking to somebody at work, and she came home, she's like, you need to call so-and-so's husband. And I'm like, I don't know the dude, you know, like, what am I going to tell him? And he was like 12 years older than me, and I'm in my mid 20s. I'm like, I've got zero to offer. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just always been the kind of person that's like, yeah, but I'll show up. Like, yeah. What the heck, you know, kind of thing. And so I remember distinctly calling this guy who I don't know, say, hey, you know, this is Eric. Your wife and my wife were talking. Sounds like you guys are like, I was giving excuse after excuse for him not to meet with me in the conversation. I know this is weird and you probably don't want to talk to a guy, but I just wanted to throw it out. I'm sure you don't want to, but if you ever wanted to meet, you know, and as soon as I was like, if you ever, he's like, yeah, how about tomorrow morning at 9? And I was like, okay. Yeah, that'd be great. So, you know, I can reflect back on awkward conversations like that and just kind of felt like there's been many of those. Even in college, my wife and I got married early while we were both in college. And our place was like the hangout for our friends and their couples. So we were doing small group, even this is going to date me, but we used to like once a week, we had 90210 parties Beverly Hills Night was the big show. And so all our friends and their girlfriends or boyfriends, they'd all come over and hang out. So, the breadcrumb trail is there was little bits of it always there. But I think, you know, one, I think the affair was a catalyst moment for some healing in her life, for some sexual abuse that happened as a child that she had blocked out. So there was a number of things going on there. And then I think for me, like I said, I think it was the kind of wake up call, like, he'd been tapping you on your shoulder for, you know, the last 5, 6, 7 years. You're not really getting the point. So, let me expose you and get you to a place where you're going to need to depend on me and see this is a little bigger than it is. And so I think both of those moments together, it was kind of just obvious. Yeah. And, so we felt like we didn't know what it looked like to start a marriage ministry, you know, at that point, but we knew ministry was kind of the path. So, that's what caused us just to jump on staff at a church and say, let's just start trying to figure out what ministry looks like and let God mold and guide this journey as we go.
Can you give, I don't want to put you on a spot, but can you give an example? Cause I'm very curious how you said, so now you, this happened, and now you and your wife have to work through this issue. And of course, you said it shed light on you as well, and you had to work through some stuff too. Can you give an example of how maybe practically, I guess that's a way of saying it, that you had to really apply your faith and your relationship with your wife in helping to restore the marriage? Is there some specific kind of
thing? I think doing the right thing. Keeping your commitment, walking out the covenant when you don't feel like it. So here's, she told me about it Saturday afternoon, sitting on the back porch with our feet in our kids' little kiddie pool the day before Father's Day.
Oh, wow.
So middle of June. So July 30th, 6 weeks later, is our 10-year anniversary.
Wow.
You think I felt like having a 10-year anniversary? But I also was like, if we're going to do this, I'm not going to look back and say, I didn't celebrate the 10-year anniversary because I was in my feelings. So I think that was Saturday. I think Monday, I think I didn't go into work. And we drove to a town 20 minutes away, went to a Christian bookstore, bought 3 or 4 different books on affair recovery, a devotional. I remember sitting in a park on a park bench doing a devotional, and we hadn't been doing that before. So this wasn't like, oh, this was our pattern. We're the couple that gets up and prays together and hugs and kisses and sends each other off to work. Like we weren't doing spiritual stuff together a whole lot other than church and small group. So that was a new action, but was also like, if we're going to grow and reconcile and heal, like we got to be intentional. And do you think I felt like it 2 days after? So I think it was a lot of those moments where you go, you know, are you going to do what God's called you to do? If this is a marriage and this is your wife, are you going to do, and I'm not, listen, people listen, I didn't do it perfect. I had other moments where I yelled and cussed and left the room and slept on the couch that night, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not, this wasn't like a smooth, oh, I forgive you. Let's, you know, ride off into the sunset. But I think it was a commitment to try to be intentional, to get people around us who could hold us accountable and to just do what you don't feel like doing because it's the right thing to do. And I think that those were some of the moments that helped the healing process and probably sped it up, right? If I would have let my emotions drive what I was and wasn't going to do, I think that's when the process takes longer, because it's like, I'm going to have 2 good days and then a terrible week and not talk to you at all and then have to recover from that.
That's a great point, because I think when both are in, no matter what, that's a game changer. I think when marriages often get in trouble when one of the two, which often leads to both eventually, says it's this way or else.
Yeah.
That can be really damaging sometimes. But to be, like you said, committed and intentional, and you're saying I'm in it no matter what, that's game changing.
And again, that was a volitional decision, right? Not an emotional response, because there was lots of times emotionally I'm not in,
yeah,
and I want to be out, and I need to call a friend to talk me off the ledge, and you know what I mean. So it was not a linear movement of okay, I'm committed and I'm putting my foot down and I'm not wavering. You know, it was intellectual assent followed by willpower at times, accountability and support from other people at times, and some ups and downs. Yeah.
So can we talk a little bit about your ministry that you've got going on now? It's altered marriage. Yeah. And until I saw your shirt, I didn't realize it was spelled with AR.
Oh yeah.
Instead of
ER.
So it was very clever.
Very
clever. What are some things that you've learned in working with couples? I mean, you went through your own situation, and I'm sure looking back now, you can see some things that you didn't see in the moment. But are you seeing any patterns with couples? Are there any things that you can identify pretty quickly that tips you off as to what's going on, or how do things go when you meet with a couple?
Yeah, obviously every couple's different and all the nuances of what they're dealing with. But it's probably fairly easy to say that every couple, probably two of the areas I'm going to address or identify first, most of them a lack of intentionality.
Okay.
We're just not, you know, life gets busy. You have, you know, Chris, you were talking about the 7-year itch and, you know, all these different things. And it's the reality of, one, it takes a while to settle into your relationship rhythm. And so some experts say it takes couples 8 to 12 years to find their rhythm. And so obviously you see the problem that with a 7-year itch and it takes you 8 years to find your rhythm.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think it needs to take that long, but it's just the idea that it takes a while. And then, you know, experts continue to say that the birth of the first child, that marital satisfaction drops 43%. So you usually have that somewhere in that first period as well. Mm-hmm. But I think people just get busy and, Our world has over romanticized relationship to the point where we've got this faulty belief system that a healthy relationship is something where everything kind of happens organically, spontaneously. It's based around chemistry, and really we shouldn't have to put a ton of effort in if we're really in love. And so intentionality is huge. You get busy, you get kids, you get jobs. The fun, connecting, enjoyable part of the relationship takes a backseat to all the business side of the relationship. I mean, it's a business, right? You got assets, you got kids, you got employees. I mean, it's there's a business aspect to it. And if we're not intentional with when we do business stuff and when we do relational connecting fun stuff. So I think intentionality is always an area we're going to touch on. You know, what are you doing regularly? What's your weekly rhythm? What's your pattern? What are you doing to ensure the right things are happening? And I think the other thing couples struggle with is just managing their differences. And that's what usually trips up many couples. And again, I think we've got these faulty models of relationship that are taught to us, that are portrayed in movies, and frankly, that we experience in dating, right? Because dating's not marriage, and it sets us up for failure. And so a lot of couples believe we should be able to resolve all or many of our differences in marriage. And when you get married, I believe you sign up for a specific set of irreconcilable differences. There's many issues in your marriage you will never resolve. And so if we're wasting energy trying to meet in the middle and resolve these issues, we're going to find a lot of frustration. We're going to get really tired. We're going to get hopeless. But if we understand that I call it closing the gaps. So it's this idea of we've got all these gaps in our relationship. We're not going to meet in the middle, mm-hmm. but can we step towards each other? And every area that we close the gap a little bit, there's less room for conflict, less room for frustration, disappointment, hurt. And so for a lot of couples is figuring out, hey, let's figure out how to manage our differences in a better way than you are right now. Certainly not trying to change each other, or not trying to find some 50-50 meet in the middle compromise on everything. It's not going to happen. Like an extrovert and an introvert are not going to settle on, oh, 1.49 times a week we go out and it's, man, we're both super happy. It's not going to happen. Each right. are going to give a little, and probably neither one are going to fully love what they've given or what the end result is. But do you value your spouse and the other person enough to want to step towards them in your areas of difference? And then do you accept who they are? Okay, my spouse will never be affectionate the way I like to be affectionate, because that's not how they're wired. Mm. But are they putting effort in to, hug me once every 2 days when they could go 2 months without hugging me? Awesome. That's, that's growth. That's progress. That shows an act of love. But if I'm hoping or I'm trying to work towards them one day becoming as affectionate as me, you can see the setup for failure. So I would say that's a long-winded answer for intentionality and managing differences. Those will be two areas I'd touch on first every single time.
I would think that a lot of guys struggle with the second one of those. I mean, we'll talk about the other one in a minute because I really want to get to intentionality. But I think a lot of guys are like me, where you see a problem, you work the problem. Right. So yep. you see differences. Again, you have to rank this. You can't go, completely off the deep end for some minor difference. But if you see a difference, then you want to address it in some way, even if you're not mm-hmm. approaching it emotionally. Right. And so I think what you said is really interesting. And I've never heard it described that way, where you have to understand that you're going to have these differences and they're not resolvable, at least not to the level that you would necessarily like. Mm-hmm. So speaking to guys, what are some things that guys can do to accept this? I guess make some progress in this area. Is it about communication? Is it expressing what you need, or how do you get through this reality that you're going to have differences you can't resolve?
Yeah. The great part, I'm chuckling because, obviously podcast listeners won't see Chris's face, but the agony on Chris's face and trying, it's almost like yes. he's trying to manage, this is ridiculous. We need to solve this stuff. Like right, there's almost right. this conundrum in your own eyes. This is hilarious. Yeah, my easy answer to the guys would be quit. Quit trying to solve it. Like stop. Okay. Just which is impossible. So here I am, and obviously we're doing some generalization, but usually generalizations are fairly accurate. Most guys are problem solvers.
Right.
And most of the time, like you said, if a spouse brings an issue, our first reaction is solve it. And so, I've got a wife and 3 daughters. So I distinctly remember, I can vividly picture sitting in our living room one day, and it was my wife and our 2 oldest, and they were talking about something. And, I'm a counselor, and, I do this. So I know that women enjoy talking about a problem or an issue, not necessarily with any desire to resolve it. I get that, but I don't get that. And so I remember, I think it was about some little girl at school. It's easy for me. It's like, oh, Susie at school's messing with you. That's easy. Tell the teacher and then quit dealing with Susie. Like, come on, we're done. End of story.
Right.
But I remember it was like in unison, my wife and our oldest I said something and they both like at the same time said, we don't want a solution. And, you know, it's one of those moments like, you're right. I already know that. And so the sad thing is oftentimes when a wife brings something to a husband, when a husband responds intellectually or factually, which is what we're doing, the wife leaves that interaction feeling like there's been no connection. Mm-hmm. And that's a mistake a lot of guys make is when we respond with a solution, when we respond intellectually or factually, when our wife was desiring an emotional connection, what she really wanted was, I'm so sorry, that sucks. Which again, does not make sense to me because I don't sit around talking about what sucks. I try to solve what sucks so it doesn't suck anymore. Like that just makes sense to me. But I think for a lot of men, one of the skills we've got to learn in marriage is just connecting. Man, it's called empathy, right? Oh man, that's terrible. I'm sorry you're having to deal with that. When our tendency is, well then, you know, see if you can move two cubicles over so you don't have to deal with Amy anymore. I mean, it sounds like she's miserable, you know, tell your boss. So I would say that's probably men, how do you get to a place? And here's the good news. Like if I was talking to a couple and this is their struggle, I would also say, help each other out. Like don't make this a mystery. So the wife, you can, as you teach your husband, you can come to him and say, hey, I don't want a solution. I just want to share something with you. And now you've already, he knows now. Okay. So that increases our chance that he's going to respond right. Mm-hmm. And then even if she doesn't, if the husband's unsure, just ask. Do you want a solution or are you just wanting me to listen and support you? So she can tell you, right? And so, you know, if couples, and that goes back to intentionality for me, because the answer you'll get from couples, especially wives, is, well, he should just know. Okay, well, he doesn't know. We don't know. And that's part of teaching each other, especially early on in marriage. What do you need from me? And so I think if a wife will tell a husband, I'm not wanting a solution, I'm wanting to connect. And if a husband will ask, are you want a solution? You want me to brainstorm with you, or you just want me to listen and support you? We're going to have a lot better chance of that interaction going well than if we're just winging it like, do I give her a solution this time or not? So I think that, you know, that's one thing, Chris, is how do we focus on the emotional connection and not the factual response and problem solving?
And real quick, and Chris, I want you to keep going because I want you to touch on the other point you brought up earlier. But real quick, with regard to what you just said there, though, Eric, one of the things that I know has been challenging for me in that situation is not necessarily that it's just a situation that needs a solution to it, but instead, maybe my wife is sharing something with me and I don't agree with how she, maybe the situation played out, how her role in it. And I feel like in some ways she needs to do things differently or interact with whatever the situation is differently. For me, I find it especially hard to empathize with her in situations where I feel like, well, what did you expect? Like you act like that and someone's going to treat you like this. I can offend her by saying, you know, going down that road, you know?
Yeah. Shame on you, Mike.
That's true.
I feel like we kind of joked about this pre-show, but I feel like we're moving. I think I called it Olympic level skills. You know, I feel like we're running up the ring of higher and higher skill level. And it's not so much even a skill level as much as just learn responses on some sense. So I would say this. One of the keys to relationship is something called validation.
All right, guys, I hate to rug pull you on this critical moment, but that is all the time we have for today's show. And we will post the second half of this interview with Eric Wooten tomorrow. All right, guys, until then, keep living empowered.